Well, Roberta Grimes sure is enlightened. She does bring the fun to these things, right? We're going to be back with your phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Roberta Grimes with us, our final hour here, and we are going to take your calls as well as we talk about after-death experiences. Kind of enlightened, Roberta. Have you always been this way?
I don't think so. I think you get more so as you get older. But I've always been curious. Why aren't people not more curious about what's really going on? Because the things we're told, we can see, are wrong. I mean, the things scientists say are so unsatisfying now because they're stuck in materialism. And when I realized that none of what I had believed as a Christian was true, I was appalled to think I ever could have believed it. It was very thin gruel, and no God who loves you would treat us that way. So I was very relieved when I found out the truth.
Have you ever had that cold, stark feeling that the afterlife does not exist?
Oh, not for a long time.
But you did have it once, didn't you?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, everybody does.
It's a horrible feeling.
Yes. Yes. That's why everybody has the power to learn the truth. And once you learn the truth, you'll never be afraid of anything again. Because the fear of death is the core fear, right? Everything you're afraid of is a kind of death. Well, what I've learned is when you no longer fear death, you don't fear a blessed thing, not even the mortgage payment. You don't fear anything.
Well, I got to tell you that, you know, you do open up our eyes. Makes you wonder about this. I'm not looking forward to passing on, but it's a little nice to know that it's a little more pleasant than you'd think.
It's the best time of your life because it's your real life and everything in it.
But no rush. No rush getting there, right?
Well, I have a rush. When I discovered who my primary guide was, I insisted that my life be replanned so I could die at 83 if I want to.
That's the age you're going?
I don't know. But I insisted. So according to Suzanne, they have replanned my life. I mean, Thomas Jefferson died at 83. What if I'm doing all of this for him, and it turns out that's what I've done. I've lived my whole life for him.
Can I ask your age now? Is that appropriate?
Yeah, I'm 70.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. This is what 70 really is. Once you know the truth, you live in joy.
That woman who came in to do Beyond Belief with me in Denver was 70 years old?
Uh-huh.
No, you're not.
Aren't you wonderful? I love you, George.
You must be taking our longevity supplements or something, because you're staying young.
Well, I'll tell you, if you think young, you stay young. If you don't slow down, you never slow down.
Okay, so you're 70, and you're saying that you want 13 more years.
No, I don't really want 13 more years, but it's only fair I get to leave then. If I want to. So they say,
well, don't you want as many as you can get?
Look, if you're in prison and you know that there's a real life waiting for you outside, and are you going to beg for more years in prison? Think about it.
Yeah, but this is not a bad life to hang around with for as long as you can. It's
a shadow. Plato said we're chained in a cave and all we can see is the light flickering on the cave of the wall.
So when you check out, it doesn't bother you. You're looking forward to this.
I am, yes, of course.
But you're timing it at about 83.
Well, it's only fair. He died at 83. I shouldn't have to stay longer. So Suzanne says that we have replanned my life, and of course I would have been part of it, but I don't remember it. And now I do have an exit point at 83, but I have a later one that they hope I'll stay and take.
So we have at least 13 more years with you.
I would assume so, unless maybe I get to go sooner. I don't know. But you don't fear death when you know what it is, when you understand what reality is. Because, I mean, I started out wondering, where are the dead? I mean, you look up to the clouds, where, you know, it doesn't seem real that there could be a heaven. Now I understand what's going on.
We do what is called the Coast to Coast Dead People Show every once in a while, a couple times a year. Those people who have died, who are guests, we play their shows in honor of them and in memory of them. We're working on one now for another month from now or so. So
really?
Let's assume the day comes that you go.
Uh-huh.
And I pull out that clip and we do in your part of the Coast's Dead People Show because you've passed on around 83.
I'll be listening in. You can be certain.
I may very well use this segment talking about this. But
right.
but you don't have any qualms about going.
George, I know where I'm going. I understand how it works. And it's wonderful. I mean, from the minute it starts, you never have pain. You never have problems. You don't worry about, you don't need money. And nothing, and all the things that are weighing us down.
Like office space, you don't have to pay your bills anymore.
There are no
bills. I'm not going to pay my bills
anymore. And I have to add a disclaimer here. If you kill yourself, because we're telling everybody, hey, this is the best thing ever.
That's right.
If you kill yourself, you don't end up having the same kind of happy life.
All bets are off, right?
Yes, yes. And many people who kill themselves will end up in a place that's not as pleasant.
That's your disclaimer.
Yeah, I have to do that because people, when they saw the title of my book, said, you're going to make people want to kill themselves. No. Yeah, I mean, however far you've gotten, finish this little time on Earth, because if you ace it, if you do a really good job of it, you're going to have the most fun you ever can imagine for a very long time afterwards.
But you're not going to be disappointed if you get to 84 and realize, oh, my gosh, I'm not gone yet.
No, I'm sure I'll probably be willing to stay longer. I just wanted the option, because when we plan our lives in the beginning, we plan in maybe 2-3 exit points that our higher consciousness takes. We're not aware of that. We don't do it consciously, although very often when people are about to die, you can see them wrapping things up. Their higher consciousness is making things neater. I hear so many stories like that. But when the decision is made, then we just, you know, we leave. But if that decision isn't made by your higher consciousness, you've got to stay until the next exit point, and maybe lobby your higher consciousness to let you go.
All right, you ready for calls?
I am.
They are loading up for you. Let's start by going east of the Rockies. Paul's with us in Parlin, New Jersey. Paul, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
Thanks, Paul. Good.
Glad to hear it. Yes, I was wondering. First, I have to start off by saying that when I had graduated high school, quite some time ago, 1980, me and several friends, we decided that we were going to take our summers and go ahead and follow around the band, the Grateful Dead. And we had done that. We kept it honest, and we did it right up until the summer of Jerry's death in 1995.
Wow.
And we had met a fella on the first tour that we had done. We were, in fact, it was out in Chicago and Soldiers Field. And this guy, he came up to our campsite, and he began to talk to us. And for some reason, I had this really strange feeling about this guy. I don't know if it was like a deja vu moment or kind of like, I know you or I'm supposed to know you. That type of feeling. And before he left, he hung out for a little bit. He bummed a cigarette off of a friend. And then as he was leaving, he turned around and he said, listen, he says, tonight, he says, when you get down by the stage, stay the hell away from the right-hand side, okay? He says, just don't go by there. He says, there's a lot of bad energy there. And he went on his way. And like I said, this was our first summer doing this. And one of my buddies made a joke. He says, and he's eating mushrooms or something or other. And he says, how about that? And I says, yeah. I says, well, hey, I says, I don't know about you, but I'm going to take his advice. There's plenty of room out there on that field. I'm just going to stay away from that area. I says, I don't know. Maybe he got something planned crazy or something, or you know, he knows of a fight or something that's going to take place or something, and he was just giving us a little warning. Well, we were down there at the field, and right at the beginning of the second set, the winds picked up pretty good, and a large banner that was hung up and braced in between two poles, kind of like a goalpost, it had come straight down on the left-hand side of the field. Now, there was only a few people hurt, and they were very minor injuries. It wasn't a big thing. But I had just said to my friends, I said, did you see what happened when we got back to our campsite? I ran into them again because we were separated during the show. I said, did you see what happened? And he says, I was there. He says, I was over there by the left-hand side. I figured if something was going to happen, I wanted to see what it was going to be. I said, when I, on the other hand, decided I'm going to go and stay away from that area, which I did. Now, two shows later, We're in Saratoga, New York, and we run into the same fella. I mentioned to him, I says, do you remember us? I says, from the Chicago show. I says, we were out on the field and you told us to stay away from the left hand side. He says, did you take me? He says, I could tell by looking at you. What a smile. I could tell by looking at you, you took my advice. He said, look, here's a little another little titty you might want to think about. He says, when you're out there tonight, he says, don't be holding on to any metal things. You're getting under trees. He says, we're going to have a lot of lightning in the storm tonight. And when we were out there, it was a beautiful, it was hot. It was maybe 85 degrees. It started a little bit of a drizzle and barely any clouds at all. But yet from a distance of, I don't know how far away, a bolt of lightning came down.
Wow.
And hit the back of the field. Thank God there was nobody in that area. But, I mean, we had.
Could have been you.
We could have. We continued running into this gentleman right up until 1995.
Did you ever figure out who he was?
He called himself we don't know what his real name is. He called himself after the title of a song. He was called The Pride of Cucamonga.
Now, Roberta, could this guy have been a spirit guide?
Yes. I don't know who he was. There are a number of explanations. One is that sometimes our spirit guides will appear and look like a normal person and sometimes like a bum and warn us of things and then disappear. Or he could simply, remember, there's no such thing as time. There are people who can see the future because their minds are set up such and they have sufficient powers on Earth to be able to read what's about to happen. The dead can perceive the future. They sort of seem to do it by probabilities, but they seem to be very accurate at perceiving the future. So he could have been, you know, just almost anyone who had that ability.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. Ginger's in San Pedro, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Ginger. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions. The first one is, if one of these calamities that we've been hearing about recently befalls Earth and a whole lot of people die, is that going to affect this life after we die?
That's a wonderful question. Here's the thing. This is considered to be the best place in the entire reality and all the universes to grow because it's, believe it or not, the toughest place. Things are hard on us here more than they are in other places where we might grow spiritually. So there is a great effort on now to raise the consciousness of the planet because, in fact, we're heading for major calamity. Thomas says in 200 years. We're basically in a decline now. And then we're in such a decline that we are in interplanetary intensive care. Extraterrestrials, a race of perfected beings called the Arcturians are now guardians of this planet and are keeping away all the negative entities in the universe that would like to come and milk us for evil. That's how pathetic life on Earth has become. We aren't as aware of it, but we're in trouble. So yes, negative things can happen and are going to happen unless enough people will work to raise their own personal consciousness, because if even 10% of us did that, we would be dramatically shooting in the other direction. We would have nothing but love and light. So that's where we are. So that's a great question. How would it affect us if we die? And basically, if the consciousness rescue doesn't work, we're all fine. I mean, the universe, the reality, the greater reality, which is of which the universe is just a tiny part, is so enormous, and we're all infinitely loved. Every person listening is the best beloved child of an infinitely powerful entity. There's just no way anything can really harm you. Yeah, you can die out of the Earth could blow up, won't harm you. Nothing will.
Let's go next to Edward in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Hi, Edward. Go ahead, sir.
I was interested in your relation with Thomas Jefferson. I have a somewhat similar affinity. I think he was perhaps the greatest benefactor in the Western Hemisphere, with the possible exception of Thomas Edison, who literally lit up the world.
He did, didn't he?
You might be interested to know that in 1944, Edgar Cayce gave a reading for an 8-year-old boy that would have made him born 1936, and according to Edgar Cayce, this boy was Thomas Jefferson. Cayce gave directions on how the boy was to be educated in a private school and some other details. The boy's family failed to do this, and as a result, the boy has, now a man, of course, has had a very uneventful life. I'm told that he had been in Virginia Beach an extended time, I don't know what years, and that he's currently in Charlottesville, Virginia. When he visited Monticello for the first time, I think he was 24, when he went into Jefferson's home, he already knew what was in the next room. So I see a little disparity here between your account of Jefferson and Edgar Cayce's. Concerning the devil, there are some interesting biblical passages. In Job 1:7, we read this, that there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before Yahweh. Satan came among them, and Yahweh said to Satan, "Whence have you come?" Satan answered Yahweh, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking up and down on it." Well, that's a very good description of, I think, of what I see around me today where I am. Satan and going up, running to and fro on the earth and walking up and down on it. Now, in Luke 10,
what you're trying to say is that there is a biblical reference to Satan, right? That's what you're, or there are multiple biblical references, including in the Gospels, to Satan.
Well, I would agree with that. Go ahead.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I mean, we don't have time for an extensive discussion of the Bible. I'm very familiar. I'm a biblical scholar, actually, and primarily of the Gospels. And one of the things Jesus said was he was replacing the entire law and the prophets with God's law of love. And he says that in the Gospels. He didn't want his teaching to be packaged with the Old Testament. And it's easy for people who are aware of the action of demons to believe there must be a powerful negative entity. And the entire Old Testament was written by human beings who believed that. And the New Testament was put together by the Council of Nicaea originally, and they added things and they subtracted things. So in order to really, if you care about Jesus, and I think most Christians probably do, you've got to do a little biblical study before you assume that certain things are true. I care about the truth. I want to know the truth. Jesus says you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And that's what I care about. And I have to tell you, there is no evidence, and the dead consistently tell us there is no powerful evil entity. And with regard to this, the notion that Edgar Cayce said something, I've studied Cayce. Cayce was a wonderful seer, but he was not perfect. There were a lot of things he got wrong. So I tend to trust the guy I know, and the guy I know is not happy. He does not proud. He's not bragging that he had that lifetime, but it's pretty clear he would have been dead before this kid.
All right, Roberta, hold on. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, last week's luncheon with psychic Joseph Jacobs went off without a hitch. Our next one is May 17th. With the Beverly Hills matchmaker, Marla Martinson. That should be kind of interesting. Now, to reserve your spot, send an email to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com, and they will call you back, include your phone number if you would, and get your reservation. It's for May 17th, lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. Okay, welcome back with Roberta Grimes. Final segment, the book, The Fun of Growing Forever. Where do you get the book, Roberta?
It's available through bookstores on Amazon. It's available in not just Kindle and print, but also audiobook. And it's been translated into 33 other languages, available on Amazon.
And when you were writing it, I noticed our dear friend Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup fame and everything else, Dumb and Dumb Books, he wrote a foreword for you.
He did. He's such a wonderful man. Anyone who thinks he must be nice cannot know the half of it. I had met him, and I needed somebody who really was the right, just the right person to do the foreword. So I I was told the best thing to do would be to write what I would hope he would write. So I wrote a little, oh, this is pretty good, and, you know, kind of a dainty little foreword. And when he sent it back signed, he had taken all of my sort of quibbles out of it. He said, this works, this is great, do this, do that. He's just, what a kind person he is. I think that's the best word I can, he's kind, he's loving, and yes, he did. And he was happy to do it. I have to say, I'm so delighted with the man.
All right, back to the phone calls we go. Let's go to first-time caller Patricia in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Oh, gosh. George, you are full of goodness, and you are, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks, Patricia.
Wonderful. You're welcome. Thank you. Wonderful woman. I would like to know, because I believe everything you've said, which is kind of unusual.
And the Thank you.
Jesus, I believe in the teachings of Jesus. I am an ardent Catholic, but of course you have to, you know, really make your own decisions as you go through this. Eucharist is what I like. But where you said learn the teachings of Jesus, the only place I know to learn the teachings of Jesus is in the Bible. Is there your recommendation?
Well, here's the thing. The Gospels is actually the only place where we have preserved the teachings of Jesus. And I like confirmation of everything. I'm a serious researcher. So what I've done is to take what the dead have been telling us for almost 200 years and use them to determine what is true and what's not. And we can now confirm that 2,000 years ago, Jesus told us things about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives that we could not have confirmed in any way until the 20th century. Now, to me, that's extraordinary. So all the things he taught us about why we're here, what we're doing, what happens if we don't do it, and what will happen if we finally all do get a clue and do it, all of that is confirmed by the dead. Jesus is real. Anyone who says that Jesus was a myth is wrong. Jesus was a real human being who walked the earth and who came from the very highest level of reality. He's probably at the time the most advanced being who ever had lived. So advanced, Thomas says, that God could literally walk the earth in the person of Jesus to try to figure out why we were screwing up so badly 2,000 years ago. And then he told us how to fix it. And those are the teachings. Unfortunately, however, almost no Christian takes them seriously because they think they've got an easier way. That easier way does not exist. We're supposed to do the work. And fortunately, because Jesus loves us, God loves us, the work is easy. So why not do that? You know, thank you for being such a devoted person to Jesus. But please understand, Jesus is real, and Jesus does expect us. He says, if you love me, you'll follow my teachings. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. He's right.
So what do you think of angels and their role?
Angels, we are told, are a higher level of entity. They never incarnate. They're God's servants. So when I say God, I'm talking about this energy, this consciousness, this potentiality, which is where everything comes from and of which we are a part. But they're servants of that energy.
And do they actually deliver on certain things?
Yes. Everybody listening has a guardian angel who basically is there to keep us from having an accident in this very, very dangerous place where we live. And they intervene all the time in our lives to keep us safe. And then when it's time for us to leave at an exit point, they help that be as easy as possible process. They, for example, will make sure that if it's going to be a painful death, we're out of our body, we won't feel it.
All right, back to other calls. Let's go to Wayne, truck driving out there in Central Ohio. Wayne, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hello, George, Ms. Roberta.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to say hi. It's very interesting. Finally found someone that I can identify with on the perception that there is no physical hell or even, you know, heaven. I was never raised in a organized religion life. And in my early 20s, I always liked to tell people that I was more of a spiritual person than a religious person. But here in my later life, and then about a decade ago, I just sort of recognized that heaven and hell was your conscious observance of the life that you were living. You know, if someone said, well, if you do these bad things, then you're going to go to hell, you know, and I just realized that that was like a, you know, more of a conscious observance of, you know, if you're doing bad things and treating people badly, then you're living a hellish existence. And if you're full of love and, you know, very kind and outreaching to people, then that's more of a heavenly existence. But how am I, I've become more scientific in my beliefs. How would I raise my vibrations or my frequency without being a spiritual type of person? What methods can I use?
Let's help him out there, Roberta. What can he do?
Well, here's the thing. We are all spiritual beings. That's our essence. That's who we are. That's a part of us that's eternal. Now, you may not feel you're spiritual, but you really are, and it sounds to me as if you're quite spiritual. The way to raise your vibration is to learn to love perfectly. That's why we're here. All of us, I don't care what your religion is or your background is, and the key to that really is learning perfect forgiveness. Forgiveness is very difficult if you're going to forgive each thing, but it is possible to train your mind never to be bothered by anything again. And those steps are in The Fruit of Growing Forever, and it's amazing how quickly it happens. Your mind is, this limited mind you have on Earth, is habitual, it's lazy, and it easily changes. So once you teach your mind not to react, it stops reacting. And no matter what, I mean, I'm amazed at how quiet it makes it to be inside your mind. Once you stop being annoyed at the guy who cut you off in traffic or the paper was late again or all the things.
Good luck.
I'm sorry?
Good luck.
It works. George, try it. It's in the book. It really, really works. And it's permanent. Because your mind is only reacting to things in this hysterical way because that's what you taught it to do. You taught it it's important that the dry cleaner didn't have my laundry yet. And it's important that, you know, my brother's driving me crazy. You can teach it so that nothing makes you crazy. There's nothing. You have peace inside. That's the first step. And when you do that, beginning to love perfectly becomes possible.
Roberta, what was your catalyst that got you involved in this?
Well, I had those experiences when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up in the middle of the night and thought there was no God, and I was 8 years old. I was scared to death, and there was a flash of light. And a voice said, you wouldn't know what it is to have me. If you didn't know what it is to be without me, I will never leave you again. And it feels to me, you know, 60-odd years later as if that just happened. I had to know where that came from. I was driven to know where that came from. Especially after the light and the voice came again, this time I was 20, and this time it just said, I will never leave you. And of course, that was Thomas. He was prompting me to do this research. He's been driving me, you know, like a horse and buggy my entire life.
Let's go to John in Baltimore now. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great.
Hi.
I've been happy listening to you all night long. I love this woman.
Thank you, guys.
I love you, too. Thank you, John.
I had a quick story and then a question. When my ex's stepmother had passed 2 years back. Just before she went, her husband said, go ahead and go. You're ready to go. And she just went, Wow. And she did that for like 2 or 3 minutes.
That's like Stephen Jobs when he was dying.
Wow. What is, like, she was going somewhere. And if it's anything like Defending Your Life, which is sounding like sometimes, you've ever seen that movie, Albert Brooks, you go in and there's Rip Torn as a counselor guiding you through your life in some trams, and you go through and fix this thing. So.
But what was that Stephen Jobs talked about and that his relative talked about? What is that whoa that they're talking about?
When we first see the people gathering around our bed that we used to think were dead, and sometimes we only see them up in a corner of the room for some weird reason, that's where they start, and that's sometimes they stay there. But as soon as we see them, we understand everything. We understand, yes, life is eternal. I'm going to a good place. These people I love are not lost at all. I have them back. At that point, people usually stop communicating with the living. They're communicating in their minds with these people who have come for them. And this reaction of wow especially happens when people had no idea that was going to happen. Everybody listening now will be looking for that when they're on their deathbed. Where, you know, when they show up, I'm going to be a lot happier. And they will show up. But if you didn't know that was going to happen, what would your reaction be? But what, you know, his mother-in-law and Steve Jobs said, wow, I can't believe it. There's mom. There's my dog from when I was eight. All of that.
Or is it the brain hallucinating before you die?
No, it's not. Understand that the brain is nothing but a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot. It has no ability to do very much at all. Nearly everything we think the brain does is actually done, except run the body. It does that and communicate with the mind. But it's all done by our minds, and our minds are eternal. Because scientists don't grasp that basic fact, they're not allowed to. I think many of them suspect it at this point. They keep looking for a source of consciousness in the brain, which is just like looking for a source of your evening news inside the television set. The guy must be in here somewhere. No, it's all different from everything scientists tell us, which is so sad. But they're going to get a clue very soon.
We've got Barry in Santa Barbara now. Go ahead, Barry. Thanks for calling.
No, it's Perry in Santa Barbara.
Okay, Perry.
I like Perry Como.
All righty.
Hi, Perry.
Somebody remembers Perry Como.
Yes. Well, see that I remember him well because I'm very old.
Yeah, I think I was named after him, guys. I just wanted to tell you what you said earlier about any concert you want to go to, and then I have a question after that, please. I've seen Elvis in concert twice when I was a kid.
Wow, that's great. I saw Sinatra once.
Oh, yeah, you know, hey. You know, they were good friends,
actually. They still perform there. They still perform. Not everybody does, but they do. John Lennon.
Yeah,
well.
And that is something. You see, one of the concerts, it was the last one I went to, was in October of 1976 in Chicago Stadium, which is gone now. My grandmother was there, and she since passed in 89, so I'm thinking probably she saw Elvis Presley more than once now.
Good point.
You can get any Elvis. You can get early. You can get, you know, the guy in the dark jacket. You can get Fat Elvis. You can get Las Vegas.
You get them all.
You can get any Elvis.
Perry,
yeah.
Go with your question. Only got two minutes left.
And just one more very quick comment. I just said, you know, Roberta, you make dying less fearful, really.
That's my point. That's
great. And, you know, do our, when I dream of relatives that have passed away, and I'm saying, I thought you died, and they said no. You know, and I'm thinking, then there is no death, really. I would like your comment on that, Roberta, and thank you so much. You're
okay, Perry. Thank you. Go ahead, Roberta.
Thank you. Well, here's the thing. We often, when we leave, we travel out of our bodies during sleep, and we often meet with our dead relatives. Sometimes we remember those encounters as dreams. If a dream of a dead relative persists past lunch, he still seems vivid and stays with you, then it's a communication dream. You really were with them.
If,
how's that? Isn't that exciting?
Roberta, as we wrap things up, and you're going to get lots of emails from people who probably want more information. They keep coming in. You are 100% convinced that the other side does not have a hell.
100%. It doesn't have a fiery hell, and there's nobody judging you, and you will never go any place forever. Everybody is rescued.
So big-time religion just made this up to get us, didn't it?
To some extent. I mean, I don't know where it came from, but what I'm trying to do is replace these errors with the truth, because the truth is good, and the truth is fair, and it makes sense. It makes sense, which religions usually make no sense.
And it'll set you free. Roberta, thanks for being on the program. Really appreciate it. That's our Sunday night show. We've got a full week of programs for you here on Coast to Coast AM, so just leave it on your dial. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.